Welcome into K-State Online. I am Mason Voth. That is Drew Callaway. It is Thursday, July 31st, last day of July. When we get to tomorrow, it will be game month for K-State football, which means the 2025 Aer Lingus College Football Classic is just a couple weeks and a few days away from taking place. I mean, what, that'll be, well, I guess we would leave in 19 days from tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And pretty close to right at, I guess, 3 weeks from when the game would take place. So it is rapidly approaching. If you still need to make some adjustments to your schedule or you want to be over there or figure something out, you can do that if you go to cats2ireland.com for travel, hospitality, ticket information, everything else you might need while you're over exploring the Emerald Isle. And then, of course, watching the Cats and the Clones on August 23rd of 2025. We are here today because you got a little dosage of K-State coaches talking to the media earlier today, some of the position coaches. So Matt Middleton spoke to some people, Brian Anderson spoke, Luke Wells, the new tight end coach for K-State, spoke, and that is where we are going to go today. And we are going to talk about the tight ends. And in particular, we are going to talk about everybody's favorite tight end, probably everybody's favorite player on the team behind Avery Johnson. It would be Lincoln Cure, the highest rated recruit in K-State history, and where the actual expectations should be for him this season. Because in some conversations I had with people today, and then thoughts that I've kind of been going over in my head, I've started to wonder, are the expectations not high enough? And does that mean that K-State isn't going to actually lean all the way in the way that they should with a player like this to have on your roster? I get it. He's a freshman. He's young. He didn't show up until, you know, the summer because he continued through basketball and track and all that. So he's not one of these, you know, incoming recruits that got here in January and essentially has had the whole off season like a regular college football player. It's a little bit of a different process that he's undergone, but we know that the physical traits are there. He is a superior athlete to a lot of people in the country. I mean, you know, superior to what, he was 42nd in the class. So there's only 41 that were allegedly better than him last season. And when you get this type of player at K-State and in the Big 12 right now, I think that you should lean on it a little bit more. And so my perspective here, Drew, is I think that the expectations that people are putting out there for Lincoln Cure, and this comes from maybe some of the way that coaches have spoke about his usage as well, are probably too low. I think that they need to be higher for a player of his caliber and the expectation of coming in. And I understand that there's going to be some complicated things for a young guy that is going to have to gain some size to be able to do some of the things that K-State expects of their tight ends. But we also know that they're probably going to try to work him in some other ways to get him the football. You've got other tight ends that they can worry about the blocking, but Lincoln Cure can be a game changer in catching the football for Avery Johnson. And I think K-State needs to lean more into it than what my anticipation is for what they're doing right now. I think the mindset might be a little kid glovish from the coaches, from the fans. Like, yes, he is a true freshman, but he is not an ordinary true freshman that K-State normally brings in. I think this should be, and this is not a hard tight end room to overtake in terms of production. I get it. Yeah. I'm going to hear, oh, the touchdowns. Touchdowns are great. That is awesome. A lot of tight ends schemed wide open for touchdowns last year. Some impressive plays in there as well. But the leading receiver out of the tight ends last year was Garrett Oakley. He had 236 yards. I will be severely disappointed if Lincoln Cure is at that number or for sure under it this year. I think when you have a five-star, according to some services, the number 42 player in the country, come to play at K-State in a Big 12 school, that is a level of athlete that is higher than what a lot of other teams can put on the field. And you should be doing the most that you can to try to get him to come out and have a, not just some role in this offense, but a significant role in this offense this coming year. And you can tell me I'm wrong, because I think you lean more towards the side of the people that I'm kind of railing against right now.
Yeah, I'm more on the side where I think that it's just going to be tough for him to get a ton of yardage. And like before we started recording, I said that like 250 to 300 yards, I think, would be a successful true freshman season for a guy that, you know, number one, didn't exactly play at a high school level. So he's adjusting to that and to the speed of the game. He also didn't get on campus until June. So he's a little bit behind other guys that are there. And then number three, with K-State's passing game, I think that there's going to be like a clear two guys that are going to be near the top in yardage with Jace Brown and Jerron Tibbs for just what we have heard and seen. And I think that those two can combine for 1,800 yards. After that, yeah, I think that it's kind of like a little bit of a jumble, and you're going to see a lot of guys that are really close in yardage. And I've done a little bit of like offhanded research a little bit on like two tight ends that I'm like, okay, these are probably like who you would compare Lincoln Cure to. One is the tight end that I've compared him to from the moment that I saw him at Goodland with Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts had 73 yards as a true freshman. And it wasn't like the Florida tight ends were lighting it up.
Yeah, but he was at Florida and in the SEC. And yeah, you know, there's yeah,
that Florida team also went 10-3 and was a good team. Like,
yeah,
there has been two extremes. There was a Kyle Pitts who had 73 yards on what was not a very good tight end room at Florida. Like, you look at what Florida did. Pretty much all their tight ends had about the same amount of yardage. Kyle Pitts really exploded the next 2 years, had a great college career, hasn't really figured it out in the NFL for whatever reason. The other one is the other extreme, and kind of who you can see a little bit is Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers had the best tight end true freshman season in college football history when he took over. Both ranked lower than what Lincoln Cure is now, but about the same in terms of what the tight end rankings were for them out of high school. So, like, tight end, not just at K-State, but across the country, it's a weird position to really figure out what an expectation should be for a true freshman coming in, because there is just so much that goes into the position. And now he's in a room where I know that the production was mostly touchdowns, but he's still the youngest player in the position group by a pretty good bit and is behind on where when he came in. I think that you're going to see a lot of Lincoln Cure. I don't think that he redshirts, but I think that if he has about 300 yards, you shouldn't be disappointed in that.
I don't think I'd be disappointed. I think more so, though, that you should aim for higher. And you're going to be a better team if you can get him to where you're kind of force feeding it a little bit more and you try to lean on it some. Like, I don't think it's one of those situations where if he hits 300 yards, you go, oh, you know, could have been better or whatever. I think that should more so be the minimum of expectation. Again, like, we're talking about a blue chip recruit. And here's what's fascinating about this. Like, you try to find comps for a player like Lincoln Cure. It's really hard to do, because if you go back and look at the top tight ends in the country over the last handful of seasons, there's not a single tight end that, because he was the number two tight end in the country in the class. If you go through and are trying to figure out, okay, where does this factor in? There's not been a player that is committed to a school like K-State of that caliber. The top two tight ends in 2024, they went to LSU and Alabama. USC and Georgia before that in 2023. You go to 2022 and you're trying to find it's Texas A&M and Georgia for the top two. Like, you don't get anybody that kind of fits the bill in there. And maybe the closest you can get is if you go back to 2021, the number two tight end in the country, he was 67th overall, ended up at Nebraska. So you're probably looking there at that and trying to find a comparison. And if you want to, like, look back on that player is now in the NFL with the Giants, and his he didn't play at all his freshman year, and then his redshirt freshman year was strong, had another decent year, and then ended up in the NFL. I think the closest comp that I was able to find for this situation, and I had to go down the tight ends a little bit more, was Daquan Wright, who was a tight end that committed to Virginia Tech, four-star, but was still ended up being on like the lower end of this thing in 2022. He was, let's see, where can I find it? Maybe it's 2021. So even then, he didn't like it was limited for him, but he ends up in a spot where he had like 208 yards in his freshman season. He's now at Ole Miss. He transferred there, had almost a 400-yard season and four touchdowns for Ole Miss last year. So I think you look at all these, and I understand what the standard is for tight ends. I understand what the standard is for a lot of players that come in as true freshmen. But I'm just trying to make people understand, like, when you're K-State and you're a Big 12 school and you're getting five-star talent, which Lincoln Kure is, according to some services, those guys should be coming in and making almost immediate impacts for you. Like, not many five-stars should be just sitting there and hanging around. Like, if those guys are of that level, you should be trying to make sure that they're ready to come out there and immediately contribute.
Here is my question then is, what do you quantify as like have it being productive? Like, I think that he's going to play in every game this year. I think that that's better than what most people would have said a year ago at this time. If he comes in, has a couple splash plays, gets a couple touchdowns, I think that's a pretty damn good true freshman season for a tight end.
It is. But he's not just a true freshman tight end. He is a true freshman tight end that was one of the top players in the country last season. And, you know, it's a little different, like, if the recruitment had gone the way and he ends up at Oregon. Well, we know that Oregon has a stable of players that, like, and of a certain level and in the Big Ten where it may not be as easy. Like, there may be a little bit more. But we know that the Big 12, most of the talent in the league is comprised of mostly three stars, and guys that have to take a little bit of that development, they don't necessarily have the insane physical traits like a Lincoln Kure does. Like, yeah, I think he's going to play in every game, but I look around and, you know, Garrett Oakley was the leading tight end for K-State last year. He had one impressive game last season. He 4 for 78 in a touchdown against Iowa State. But other than that, like, he didn't have another game last year where he was above 29 yards receiving. He only had four games where he caught three passes or more. Like, I want a little bit more of that for Lincoln Kure. I want you to be giving him the opportunity to come through for you, because I think that's what, like, should be expected here. Like, by the end of the year, maybe I should just ask you this right now. Do you think Lincoln Kure has the most catches for tight ends this year at K-State?
No.
See, I think that's a problem. I think he should. I mean, I get that Garrett Oakley is good.
I don't think Garrett Oakley will either.
You think it's Will Ancio?
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. I still think that, and maybe if it's, you know, you got two or three guys at the top that are somewhat connected, if the difference ends up being that, like, one guy caught 30 and one guy caught 29 and you split them up that well, maybe the tight end room is that good this year. And they are going to find more ways to use them other than just being touchdown merchants that, you know, hey, we schemed it up beautifully and Braden Lofton doesn't have a single guy within 100 yards of him and you're at the 3-yard line. There's not much room to work with, yet he found himself wide open. Like, okay, I could see that situation, but I think that the expectations need to be higher when you get a player of this caliber coming to K-State. Like, if obviously you have Avery Johnson, so it's not the same type of deal, but well, we can take it back to this. If Will Howard had graduated after the Big 12 championship season, K-State doesn't have a quarterback coming back. The expectation would be everything that people thought Avery Johnson was going to do last year in his first year as a starter, as a true sophomore, those same things were going to be heaped on him as a true freshman, and that would have been the expectation. That's what you would have wanted to have seen happen there. And the same thing would be, you know, if you brought in a five-star running back to K-State at some point. Your expectation would be if somebody else wasn't there, well, you've got one of the top players in the country coming in at running back. He should be your running back. Now, the good news for K-State is, fortunately, they're set up in a spot where they've got a great quarterback already. They've got a great running back already. Like, they don't have to worry about that. But in a hypothetical sense, you would be expecting that if they got it at that position. Or right now, if they had brought in a five-star defensive end for this coming season, You're not like, well, you know, I hope he gets a couple sacks this season. You're thinking, no, K-State needs you to step up now. You need to be a difference maker. You should be a difference maker because of your talent.
I would push back about defensive end because they did just literally 10 months ago add a guy that was a former four-star like 18 months ago, and we don't know if he's even going to see the field because of the positional.
Yes, depth. But, you know, that's still wildly different positionally in terms of where he was at in the rankings compared to Lincoln Kure. Like, Jayshon Ross was, he was 144 in the country. He was 19th at his position. Like, if he was, you know, Colin Simmons, who was the fifth-ranked defensive end in Jayshon Ross's class, number 28 player in the country, you're going, hey, yeah, you should probably get out there and be doing something for us in the near future. So that's why I kind of go that route. And I think that you should be, expectations should be a little bit higher. And I don't know that they need to be necessarily as high as I'm trying to convey that I think that they should be. And I think it's a little tough with a position like this in the offense. Like, you can't necessarily pinpoint, because tight ends are a little finicky, like what the number should exactly be. Like, this isn't, if it was a receiver, we know the baseline would probably be to be that big of a factor in the offense. You want to see like at least 800 yards from him or something. Not necessarily that, but like, you'll know it when you see it. And I'm just going off of the way that I hear people talk about it. And it's more like, boy, I really hope that he gets involved in this in some way. It's no, he should be involved. It needs to be like every game you feel like he has a significant role in the offense at one point or another.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. I just think that there are guys ahead of him. He's still like, he's only been in Manhattan for a few weeks still. Like, you gotta let this kind of come organically. And I don't think that I think last year, one thing that I think that K-State really needs to learn when they have somebody dynamic like they did with Dylan Edwards last year, and how it felt like every time that Dylan Edwards was out there, they almost felt like they had to give him the ball. This year, you get Lincoln Kure out on the field. You don't always have to look for ways to get him the ball right away. Like, I think that makes you a little bit too predictable. So I think that if he makes a couple splash plays throughout the year and gets like 15 to 20 snaps per game, you see what happens, and he's a candidate to take a huge, huge, huge leap next season. This year, I think it's more of like getting your feet wet, get acclimated, get on the field, score a couple touchdowns, hopefully win a Big 12 title.
I mean, yeah, that would be ideal. The last part there, it doesn't really matter how you get there, I guess. I just think you give yourself a better chance if you take a player of Lincoln Kure's quality and you try to make it happen. And again, this isn't a knock on the other guys in the tight end room. Like, they're reliable. They're very good as it gets comprised. Like, I think they're probably one of the better ones in the Big 12, but they weren't difference makers last year. And K-State was a team that needed more difference makers on the field last season. They had Avery Johnson. They had DJ Giddens. They had Jace Brown, and they had Dylan Edwards at times. Now you look at it, you've got Avery, you've got Jace, you've got Dylan. The hope and expectation is that Jerron Tibbs, the way that's going, like, we'll probably need to talk about the Jerron Tibbs hype machine at some point next week, because it's getting to higher levels that I am believing in. And people are probably like, well, don't do that. K-State wide receivers, are you stupid? But you need to keep trying to maximize it. And the way to do that is you've got a pretty clear and obvious answer right there with Lincoln Kure. And I think Matt Wells is going to understand how to do this. But I'm just verbalizing that I want to see it, and that I will not be afraid that after two or three games, if it's not to the level that I think is satisfactory, I think you really need to try to ramp this thing up. And then, you know,
I would love to see it too. I think that the timetable for him to like really take off this season is probably after that first bye week.
Yeah, which, I mean, timing on that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. And that's the other thing, too. Like, it doesn't necessarily need to happen immediately. I mean, it'd be nice if it was. But I do think that's probably the right timeline, is that if you tell me you at least need kind of four games to build into it, And like I imagine he's going to catch a couple balls in Ireland. Like they're going to want to test this out and see how it works. And then you would think that you'd have a decent amount of time to give him run against North Dakota and kind of get him up to speed. And then you'll see how the next two go. Then you'll have that bye week. Like he's going to have 5 weeks of a college football season there already. And then you can try and finish strong for those last eight regular season games. And you know, we saw maybe the trajectory here should be that different level because different position, as we've talked about, though, is what Jace Brown's freshman year looked like, where he caught one ball against SEMO, and then K-State goes through whatever they have. It wasn't until mid-October he caught one ball against Texas Tech for 21 yards. Then that next week, 4 for 88 and a touchdown against TCU. 2 weeks later at Texas, 4 for 77 and a touchdown. 2 weeks later, 4 for 96 at KU, 5 for 69 against Iowa State, 5 for 52 and a touchdown against NC State. Like he did hit that, and it maximized him. What he ended up being the second leading receiver in 2023, and it was because he caught fire that last two thirds of the season, and you were able to turn him into a reliable weapon. And then you know, you look at what he did over, you know, the final eight games there of the season. So you take about five of them out or whatever, you could add on a little bit more of that production. He probably gets to the number that we're talking about with Lincoln Cure. So that could be what it looks like. And if that happens, then I'm satisfied. Like I understand there might be a buildup within the season, but I'm just saying, like, I don't want this to get to the point where at the end of the year, if Lincoln Cure comes out and does what Garrett Oakley did last year in terms of the yardage production and maybe even that catch number, I'll be a little bit disappointed in how K-State decided to use him this year.
Yeah, I'm still not quite there yet, but I need to see it play out, I think, before I say that I'll be disappointed. If all of that production comes after like a little bit of a buildup, I think that I'll be okay.
Here is what K-State tight ends coach Luke Wells had to say on Lincoln Cure to give a little more context to this before we close up.
Yeah, so, you know, Lincoln's doing a nice job. It's really tough generally for a freshman to come in, and there's a lot of things we do at the tight end position. There's a lot of different skill sets that they're going to do physically, and there's a lot of different assignments that they got to learn, and Lincoln's doing pretty well as far as spending the extra time with me or with the graduate assistants or with the signal guys or whatever it might be, and watching tape and kind of learning, you know, a whole new system from him. And I've been proud with how he's coming to work every day.
I think that part there where, you know, he kind of hits it with a really well or pretty well, whatever it was, about the work that he's put in. I think that hints that they are, as it gets closer, they're getting more fascinating and understanding with, okay, we really do want to try and tinker with this and use the opportunity we have in front of us. I'm just saying that expectations wise, I think if it's not at that level, there's a failure somewhere in there, whether the failure is on the part of the coaching staff or on Lincoln Cure himself to get to that level. Like we saw Avery Johnson as a freshman came in, immediately had the coaches glowing about him. And, you know, this is a true freshman quarterback. Like that position's much different than me. Like that's the most complex position that you're going to play on the field in terms of what would be asked of a freshman to play. And so we're talking like, well, you've got some experience on the roster. So like this guy might be in the back, be the backup. We assume it would be Jake Rubley. And then boom, week one, Avery Johnson's the backup. And by the time they got to what, game five, he had to come in and save their ass to beat Texas Tech. Like, and he could handle it. He was ready for it. So guys of that caliber, they can do it. And that's why I have confidence that Lincoln Cure can. And so if he doesn't get to that point, then I'm just saying it was probably he didn't get enough opportunities or help from the staff or the player himself led to the failure. I think that's how this thing goes. And if that happens, then, you know, one of those, there's nothing you can do about it. The other one, you can look at it and say, hey, you kind of screwed the pooch on that one. So I don't know. I'm just saying. The way some people are talking about it, don't treat this situation with kid gloves. expect a lot from Lincoln Cure this year, because that's how it should be for K-State. K-State should be using their best athletes when they have them. And Lincoln Cure is a smart player too. It's not like, you know, you've got some really, really talented guy, but he's an idiot that's going to make mistakes on and off the field. Like, that's not Lincoln Cure.
No, I don't think that they're going to treat this with kid gloves, because, I mean, I went from thinking a red shirt might be on the table to, like, I think that he will get some run in Ireland. So they're not going to treat this with kid gloves.
Yeah, I mean, you can't redshirt a player like this. If you redshirt a player like this in 2025, then you can expect to not have him on your roster next year. Yeah. I mean,
I don't think that we're going to see K-State treat this with kid gloves. It's just going to be, can they maximize and can he maximize when he's on the field? Because, again, my one hesitation is, like, you have an athlete like this, like you had with Dylan Edwards, and it becomes like glowingly obvious that when he's on the field, he's going to get the ball. Like, you got to shake things up a little bit too.
Yeah, don't be Deion Sanders and have, you know, this great athlete on your team that you could use. Maybe use him one time, you're like, oh, this is impressive, and then just not really using the rest of the season, like happened with Dylan Edwards. So
yeah,
you know, don't do that. I would say don't do that. All right, let's play a little Beat the Media Guide. Are you ready for it?
I feel better than I did yesterday. Just punt return, it was like stumping my brain because I could only think of kick returners.
Yeah, punt return. I mean, punt returns, that they're kind of more exciting because it's like kick returns. Yeah, that's basic. We see that all the time. Punt returns, you really got to make something kind of happen there. All right, let's see which way I want to go here for you on this one today. I mean, we were talking tight end, so I was like, maybe we could kind of go that route, but we did the tight end Mount Rushmore kind of recently, so maybe that would make it a little bit easier for you. So I don't really want to do that. I want to do a fun one where there are going to be some names that you know. So we're going to dive into talking about a little quarterback action.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you to give me the top five freshman touchdown pass throwers at K-State. Let me get this going here. This is another situation where, even though it's a top five, there's a player tied, so there are actually six names that you could give me on this list.
So is this list like freshman seasons, like redshirt freshman and true freshman? Or
yep, they just had to be a freshman of any kind.
All right, so Josh Freeman is probably on this list.
You would be surprised to find out that Josh Freeman is not on this list.
That surprises me, because he's like one of the ones that I can like really see playing early.
You're gonna be even more surprised when you find out how many touchdown passes it takes to get on this list.
Is it a lot or a little?
I'm not gonna tell you right now. I'm gonna keep that one tucked away.
Okay, so
also real quick, Drew, I'm throwing this out there. I need you to pause. I need to do some checking here. No, I'm actually wrong. Josh Freeman is on this list. I was reading the wrong thing. You're right.
Okay. Yeah. That makes me feel a lot better.
But it wasn't like he's comfortably on this list. He's just on there. So
do I get to know how many he had?
Yeah, he threw six.
Okay. So that gives me a little bit of a baseline. So if he had six, that means Avery probably isn't on this list. So I'm gonna, because this is what's hard, it's like you don't know where he is. I'm gonna go with Will Howard is probably on this list if six made it.
Oh yeah, hang on. I forgot to play the music. Okay. Will Howard is on this list. He is actually the leader on the list with eight.
Okay, so that does make me feel better about like where I'm at with guys on this list. Because if six made it, I know that Avery threw five as a true freshman. I'm gonna say Avery, why not?
Yep, Avery Johnson is on this list with five.
Okay.
He's in a tie for fourth with two other players.
knowing that the leader was 8 makes me feel a lot better. This is where it gets tough.
Just for reference, 5 of the 6 names on this list all played after we were born. So this is not like an extremely old list.
No, but then it's like thinking back to like who played early as a quarterback.
Yeah.
Is Dylan Meyer on this list?
Dylan Meyer is not on this list, but kind of right track of thinking for another guy that's on this list. Also, fun little fact here about this list. 3 of the 6 names on this list started a bowl game for K-State.
That actually is a great fun fact.
You've already named 2 of them, though, and Josh Freeman and Avery Johnson.
Okay, so I'm thinking back. Carson Kaufman, I know, played as a freshman, but I don't think that he played enough or had enough good stats to make it.
Definitely did not play in a bowl game as a freshman.
No. Oh, so like they started in the bowl game as a freshman?
Yes. Yes, yeah. If it was they had started a bowl game at some point in their career, that only adds one other name to this list, and it'd be Will Howard, but...
I mean, that was a good clarification.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That would have been a low bar for me to throw out there. You know, I just went on this rant bitching about how I think Lincoln Cure needs higher expectations, and then be like, well, you know, they started a bowl game at any point in their career, and that impressed me.
I mean, they could have. I'm going to go Daniel Sams.
No, not Daniel Sams. I don't know if Daniel Sams threw 5 touchdown passes in his career.
I mean, that's probably valid, but
he threw about 5 picks against Oklahoma State that one year, but
felt like about the right time because I think that he got some run in 2012 as a freshman.
Yeah, let's see here, Daniel Sams. Yeah, Daniel Sams only threw 4 career touchdowns at K-State, 0 in 2012 though.
Well, you know, it's a high bar to get on this list, apparently.
It is quite high. Lofty.
So, I've had 4 guesses now?
No, you've had 5 of your guesses.
Okay.
Because you've got 3 correct. You've got Will Howard, Josh Freeman, and Avery Johnson. And then you guessed just now Daniel Sams, and you guessed... Who was the other one? You guessed Dylan Meyer. So you've only got 1 left here.
Is Alex Delton on this list?
Oh, boy. He is not, and you picked the wrong quarterback in that battle. Skylar Thompson in 2017 through 5.
This is tough.
You came out hot, and here's what's funny about this is – they feel like the same kind of situation to me. Allen Everidge threw 6 touchdown passes in 2005. That's the one that I would have comped to like Dylan Meyer in terms of era and all that. And then
Allen Everidge is very Dylan Meyer-esque.
And then the one that I don't think you were going to get, Paul Watson threw 5 in 1988.
That was on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah. So, okay. How much time you got? All day?
I can go one more.
All right, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I'm making my circles.
That might have been the toughest one that we've done.
Okay, well, it's about to get even tougher.
Oh, great.
Actually, let me narrow this sucker down. Let's see. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Especially when 11. You started that last list with saying that Josh Freeman wasn't actually on it, I was like, oh my god, I'm not getting one.
Yeah, you know, what are you gonna do? So that takes away where so I believe there are 12 names on this list that I need from you. We're keeping it with quarterbacks. Can you name me the throwers of the longest passes in K-State football since 1969? It is noted that it is since 1969.
Okay, so with that clarification.
And there are a handful of guys on here that have it multiple times. If you name them once, I will tell you the instances in which they did it, and you don't have to, you know, tell me if it would be like if a question was Deuce Vaughn. It's like you don't have to tell me Deuce Vaughn ran for 3 touchdowns in a game this many times every time. You just got to tell me the name once.
Okay. So with that clarification on when this started, is Len Dickey one of the names on this list?
No, Len Dickey is not one of the names.
Okay, well, then why are we clarifying that it starts in 1969?
They probably didn't keep detailed records of the distance of passes back then. Probably just this guy scored and whatnot. So
longest passes is Jesse Ertz on here.
Jesse Ertz is on here. Jesse Ertz is actually on this list 3 times. 83 yards to Byron Pringle at TCU in 2016. 82 yards to Dalton Schoen at Texas in 2017. And 79 yards to Byron Pringle in the Texas Bowl against Texas A&M in 2016.
That was the one that I was thinking of, so I'm glad that that was on the list.
Yep.
I'm going to say, I'd have to imagine, because of all the hype around how far he could throw a ball, did Michael Bishop ever have a bomb?
That is a great guess. Michael Bishop did have a bomb, just one. The longest pass in K-State football history, 97 yards to Aaron Lockett against UL Monroe in 1998.
Wow, poor UL Monroe.
Yep. That play resulted in a touchdown. Fun fact about this, there's only one play on this list of the 16 that didn't result in a touchdown.
Okay, I'm going to say that L probably had a couple that make this list because, again, they loved throwing the ball deep back then.
True, please. You saw how he threw the ball. If a guy was 30 yards down the field, he wasn't hitting their vicinity. He wasn't hitting their zip code. No, L. Roberson, not on this list.
That's actually crazy because they did throw it deep. He wasn't very accurate, but you'd think that at least one of them they would have came down with.
Yeah.
Is Will Howard on this list, and is that the one that didn't result in a touchdown?
Will Howard is on this list, and it did not result in a touchdown.
Was it the screen to Deuce?
It was the screen to Deuce, 80 yards against KU in 2022. So, yes, Will is on this list one time. So how far was the one that he hit? I guess that was Adrian that threw it to Malik Knowles at Iowa State. I was trying to think how far that one was. That may have only been like 45 yards or something. That's the one that sticks out to me.
Speaking of, is Adrian Martinez on this list for the one to Phillip Brooks?
Yeah, that was dumb of me. Adrian Martinez is on this list for his throw to Phillip Brooks. I realized it once I started saying it. 81 yards to Philly B in 2022.
Thanks for shaking that loose.
Yeah.
Skylar probably on this list.
Skylar Thompson not on this list.
I feel like I have to say this, but like, there's not like a specific play that stands out to me that could be on here. But it is one of the throws that Avery had last year on here.
Nope, not for Avery. I mean, what Avery's longest throw is probably 50 yards to Jace Brown.
Well, I don't have like a list of where it all is.
I understand. That was just me in general. I think that's the longest that maybe I remember. Let me see if I can find a long real quick. Well, no, he had a 65 yards to Jace last year for the touchdown against Iowa State.
Oh, the one against Colorado was the one that I was thinking of, but I think that was only 60.
It was only 50. He had a 60 to Jaden Jackson at West Virginia.
55
to Jace against Oklahoma State.
Josh Freeman is probably on this list at least once.
You would be surprised to learn that Josh Freeman is not on this list with his.
How do you have Yaman Figgers and Jordy and you can't?
I know that's what's crazy about it is with those receivers and that arm, you would think it would be on here, but no.
Okay, so how many guesses have I had now?
Let's see. You have made 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You've made 8 guesses. You've got five slots left on here because one of those, obviously, you hit it with Jesse Ertz. He had a number of them that were on
Isn't
here.
There are crazy that Jesse Ertz has more on here than Josh Freeman did.
It is kind of wild. All right.
Jonathan Beasley probably has one play on here, maybe.
Jonathan Beasley does have one play on here. Fifth all-time, 88 yards to Quincy Morgan against KU in 1999.
Okay.
And you have used up all of your quarterbacks from that era.
That does make me feel better, actually.
Yep.
Jake Waters, probably, I'd imagine.
Yep, Jake Waters has two of them on this list, tied for 15th with a 79-yarder to Tremaine Thompson against TCU in 2013. But his number one throw, second all-time, do you know which one it is?
Is it to Lockett against OU?
Yep, 90 yards to Tyler Lockett against Oklahoma. Made the game close at halftime, was not close in the end.
No. Again, I just can't pinpoint it, but there were so many plays where like it just felt like somebody just happened to get open. Is there a Klein throw?
There's not a Colin Klein throw.
Hmm.
Let's see. Of the ones that are left on here, I don't know that there are a ton remaining that you would immediately think of. One name on here that I think you should probably know, two names that we've talked about fairly recently that are Snyder 1.0 guys, but towards the tail end of it. So those are probably two helpful of hints. One of the guys that is on this list, I truly had never heard of in my life. So
that's
actually another, there's another one too on here that, I've never heard of either.
Well, that makes me feel good about where this could go. Okay, I'm trying to think of like towards the end of Snyder 2.0, who would be slinging the rock around?
Oh, no, Snyder 1.0.
Or Snyder 1.0, who would be slinging the rock around? Is Allen Everidge on this list too?
Allen Everidge is on this list too. 80 yards to Jordy Nelson at Texas Tech in 2005.
Allen Everidge can throw a deep ball to Jordy, but Josh Freeman can't.
Well, look, it's not necessarily that it was a deep ball. It could have been, you know, grabbed and taken 70 yards on the ground, but yes.
So is there another one that you said from the end of 1.0?
Yep.
How in the heck did these guys do it? Is Dylan Meyer one of these again?
Dylan Meyer is one of these. 86 yards to Tony Madison at KU in 2004.
I'm running out of names now.
Yeah.
I know you said that it's probably not like this era, but Chad Mayfield's like a good guess.
No, not on there. And I would have agreed that I would not have grouped him in with the run of like Bishop, Beasley, Roberson, those type of guys, but no, not on this list.
And then the other one that I thought of, like, they threw it quite a bit, had some good receivers back then. It was like Matt Miller.
Not on this list. You're kind of getting warmer, though, going to that era. You just need to go back a few more years to get to a guy that's on here that I know that you've heard of. You've used all your guesses at this point. I don't know why I'm still playing the game with you.
Yes, I was going to say, you can just say who it is now.
One of Bill Snyder's first quarterbacks when we took over at K-State, Carl Straw did it the year before Snyder got to Manhattan. He had an 89-yard touchdown pass to Greg Washington at Oklahoma in 1988. And then another guy that I thought maybe you would have heard of did it in the same season, Paul Watson to David Brooks against Louisiana Tech in 1988. Then the names on this list that I had never heard of, Gary Swim to John Williams against OU in 1987 for 81 yards. And then a guy named Dan Minucci shows up on this list multiple times
Hey, Dan Minucci, I actually do know who that is. There's a 2027 recruit from Arizona that KZ's off as quarterback. It's his quarterback's coach.
What? Well, how about that? Dan Minucci tied for third longest touchdown throw or third longest throw in K-State history, 89 yards to Paul Kaufman at Mizzou in 1977. And then he also threw one to Eugene Goodloe at Nebraska in 1978 for 87 yards. So there you go. Those are the 15 longest passes in K-State football history.
You said that one of those was against Oklahoma in 1987.
Yes.
I'm looking up the score of that game because that was probably pretty ugly.
Gary Swim to John Williams.
Yeah, the final score of the game
58-7.
That's Oklahoma State for some reason.
59-10.
Yeah, 59-10. The only touchdown K-State scored was one of the longest throws in school history. That's crazy.
What are you going to do? And then you see right there a tie with KU that season. The only bright spot for K-State that year, the tie with Kansas there.
I knew that season had to be pretty ugly.
That was my dad's freshman year at K-State. And he talks about that tie with KU a lot. So I'm pretty sure that was his freshman year at K-State. I think he was either a freshman or sophomore that year.
Is it good when you are 102nd in points for and 101st in points against? Is that a good thing?
No. Then just contrast that to you fast forward 10 years and you see that K-State was like a top 20 offense and a top 10 defense for like a 6-year stretch. It's insane to think. It's really weird to think about now, and I'm not trying to age people here, but you think about for us, like when you've grown up in a lifetime where it's just like, no, K-State should be good at football. It's weird when they're not.
Yeah.
It's so weird for me to think about like somebody like my dad going to school and, you know, he got to be there for parts of early Snyder, but you look at that and you just kind of go like, he didn't see it like great football there. And like, that's what the memories that he has attached to K-State football. And it's weird to try and comprehend that like my dad's experience watching K-State football as a student, wildly different from mine. And like, and that's why you understand the appreciation that some people have and like for Snyder and that era and like where things are now for K-State is just because people like you and I are very spoiled when it's like, oh, screw this 8-win Texas Bowl season or whatever. You know, it's like that was my freshman year at K-State. K-State won 8 games. I was like, pretty boring or whatever. And meanwhile, my dad's watching K-State go 0-10-1 as a freshman. And he's like, boy, that tie, like the best moment of his life, I think.
It is fascinating that like you just look at stuff from that era and just think of like how far K-State came. Like you said, like I remember hearing stories from some of my parents' friends that were in college around that time that there was a year where K-State played at home against Oklahoma State, scored, onside kicked after they went up 7-0, didn't score, and then Oklahoma State rattled off like the next 56 with Barry Sanders. Like, like it's crazy to think of how far K-State came. In just a short period of time. Like, I'm looking at this 1987 schedule. Was Iowa the most overrated team in the country for only beating K-State 38-13 when they were number 19?
You would about think so. I mean, that's pathetic like, offense from Bill Snyder, if we're being honest.
Like, the other ranked teams that K-State played that year, like, beat the crap out of them.
Yeah. What a 3-week stretch K-State had. Number one, Oklahoma, then at number 2, Nebraska, and then at number 12, Oklahoma State. K-State scored a combined 20 points in those games and gave up a combined, let's see here, that'd be 155, do some more math. 211-20 is what the score was in that 3-week stretch. But
K-State, KU, and Iowa State were all terrible in 1987.
Yeah, and then they were even worse the next year. K-State went 0-11. As we know, Stan Parrish got the axe. And then the
they
next
hired
year.
They hired out pretty good after that, though.
Yep. 1989, also, not a great year either, though.
Insane. Like, I talked about how bad Iowa State was in 87, but Iowa State still beat KU and K-State in 87 and then squeaked out a one-point win over Northern Iowa. But, like, their box scores from that year are terrible, too.
Also, to put into perspective, like, how bad those K-State teams were, you talk about, like, just getting run out of the building against any ranked opponent they faced. You go even to just 1991. K-State went 7-4. As a 7-4 team, K-State still got beat 56-3 at Washington that year. Now, they played better against Nebraska and Colorado and Oklahoma. Like, they lost by 7 at Nebraska. They lost only 10-0 at Colorado. 28-7 to Oklahoma. Well, so like they played better as the season went on, but you're like, holy cow, like even a team that was respectable at that point and good was on, like that, they still got blown out. That puts that Iowa one into perspective. You're like, what were they doing?
That's where like there's some talk about like what does like football now compared to like then look like. Back then, all of the talent was on like 10 teams. Now it's like it's very spread out, and why it's rare, like a bigger deal when an FCS team wins now, because or like back then, because back then the FCS teams were a lot worse than the Power Four or even like the G5 programs are now. Like now there's probably a handful of FCS teams that if they played on a neutral field against some bad G5 or even like the worst power conference teams, the spread would probably only be like 7 to 10 points. Like back then the spread was like massive.
You know, it's even crazier too to look at this, like this is some people are like, you guys are young, you don't understand, like why are you just now realizing how impressive this is the fact that, you know, Snyder comes, has to try and get this thing back on the wheels. And in just his second year, he's able to get them to win 5 games. And then the next year, they win 7 games. But to me, what's most impressive is that they had to take a step back and go back to 5-6 and under 500 in 92 and to bounce back and have the season they did in 93 that, you know, got them to the Copper Bowl, 9 wins, finished ranked in the top 25. Like that 3-year period is probably what helped define what K-State was going to be. And it was legit that Bill Snyder wasn't just going to get him to not be terrible, like to get them to a point where they could become a legitimate factor in college football that people outside of Manhattan had to care about. And they were able to do that. And, you know, then they go on their stretch there where they just made bowl game after bowl game, top 25 every single season.
And that's why, like, it's way more impressive what Bill Snyder was able to do than what Lance Leipold has been able to do so far at KU, because Bill Snyder did that without the portal. He did that without like anything.
Yeah.
Like you give Bill the portal back in 1988, right before the 1989 season, the K-State turnaround is probably even quicker, which is crazy because of how quick it came back then.
I mean, it's wild that, you know, you have to go through what it was. And then from 93 through 2000, K-State finished ranked in the top 20 every season. And then you could extend it even further because 2001 was kind of an outlier reset year. And then the next two seasons, they finished ranked 7th and 14th in the country. And as we know, 03, you know, they finished ranked 14th. They won the Big 12 that season. Like, to go on that run in 11 seasons and do that after what, like, it just highlights how impressive it is. Like, yeah, look, Kansas was bad, like really, really bad. Laughing stock of college football bad. But the dynamics of everything now, while
it's a lot easier.
I don't think it'd be possible for K-State to go from what they were to the level they got to under Bill Snyder now, but it's a lot easier to get out of the basement now than it was back then. And you look at it, the situations of that time and era were what were kind of weighing K-State down. Like, KU was way down because they just made bonehead after bonehead head coaching hire. Like,
yeah,
you're a Big 12 school with modern resources. Like, all you have to do is just make a logical, sound hire. Like, this is the thing with, you look at that, and Turner Gill just was a head coaching hire that flopped. Like, on paper, it should have worked. It should have made sense. Dude that played college football in the Big Eight in this area and then had success at a G5 program. Like, that's the right ascension. You get guys like that and you think, okay, we're going to do something with it. You know, it just didn't work out for him. But then they hired Charlie Weiss and they hired David Beatty and they hired Les Miles. And most of those hires, you'd go, yeah, why would you want those guys to be your head coach? So that was the thing when you hired Lance Leipold, like, that was a logical and sound coach hiring. So of course it's going to happen. But like, Lance Leipold isn't going to rip off 10 of 11 seasons finishing in the top 20 after his first 4 years to reset. Because guess what, Lance? The clock is ticking. You're on the clock now. You got to finish in the top 20 this season to start matching up with Bill Snyder, like Bill Connolly likes to anoint you as. It's just, it's totally different now. You have the transfer portal. You have NIL, modern resources. Like, this is the thing when you talk to all these recruits, you read it in every one. Most of these guys go, the facilities don't really mean much to me because everybody's got the same facilities. Yeah, they're all nice. They're all great. Like, it doesn't matter. So yes, there will never be another Bill Snyder. And you know, I don't know how we even got to this point of talking about it today, but it's a good thing to talk about every once in a while, just to never forget how freaking awesome he was and what he did for K-State football and K-State Manhattan as a whole.
And just how quick. Like you pointed it out, like how quickly the turnaround happened. Insane. Could never be done again.
Here's a fun little question for you. Do you think you would have gone to K-State if Bill Snyder hadn't gotten it figured out and like the football program was in such a spot where it wasn't going to work, and to where, like, you know, for me, for example, like, obviously my dad was there when K-State basketball was still pretty close to, like, you know, he was in school in 1988. So he was there for the Elite Eight season. He got to experience Ahern at its peak and all that. But, you know, then shortly after they would go downhill, and like, growing up, you and I, we never saw anything work out like that. Like, I don't know that the K-State fandom for a generation like you and me would be there that would have driven us to school there. Like, I knew that I was only applying to one school. It was going to be K-State. Damn. If I didn't get in, then I'm a real idiot if that was the case. But also, like, I don't know what I was going to do outside of that. But if Bill Snyder hadn't gotten K-State football to be a product that was worth my dad wanting to watch and care about when I was growing up, and I see that, then where is my attachment level to K-State? Because then I don't know that I'm like, oh, you know, Bob Huggins and Cartier Martin are awesome. Like, I want to watch the K-State basketball. Like, I don't know that it would mean that much to me. Like, I already had that attachment to K-State. I like basketball. I finally want to see basketball be good. I don't know if it matters, though, if Bill Snyder doesn't get it on the tracks. Like, that's the even longer term impact and kind of the butterfly effect of this thing. Like, I don't know. I probably still end up there because what else am I going to do? You know, my golf skills, they were not of a caliber to get me to a place that the golf would have mattered. So,
no, I'm the same way. I think that Bill Snyder doesn't get it. You said back on track, just on the track in general, just in the vicinity of the track. I don't think that I would have ended at K-State either.
Yeah. Just where you would have been Washburn guy, you know?
No, I would have gone out of state.
Ooh, yeah. What you want a fun Mason Voth middle school doesn't understand the world yet story about exploring colleges?
Why not?
We had to fill out a survey. I think I was either seventh or eighth grade. I fill out this thing, and I don't know. It's probably just like a higher education scam to try and get people on mailing lists and stuff. And you had to list out like your top four desired schools that you would want to go to. And, you know, I don't have anything to go off of other than the fact that I like sports. So, you know, K-State was on there. Other three schools on there, you know, I'm a middle school boy in the early 2010s. Oregon, you know, sick uniforms. Virginia Tech, also great uniforms at that time. I don't know. I just kind of like, you know, these schools with Tech in their name, it sounds good. The last one, Howard. HBCU in Washington, D.C. because I knew that Gus Johnson had gone to school there. And I knew that I wanted to do not to. I mean, Gus was not like a broadcast guy there. I think he was just like an English major or something. But so I was, you know, for a stretcher, I was getting emails from Howard inquiring about if I wanted to go to school there. But, you know, I'm sure it would have been good, but.
Virginia Tech is a surprise as well. Oregon makes sense.
Yeah, or I mean, come on. Oregon was like, yeah. of course you're gonna be there. I mean, there's a whole generation of us for real.
Oh, yeah.
That stranglehold. That was a real, you know, that was a tough fiesta, boy. You're like, I want K-State to win this thing, but like it's kind of sick to see them in person. They got great stuff. Like now I have to confront the fact that I've admired them from afar, and I have to, you know. Because I was rooting for them so hard that year before or 2 years before when they were in the national championship against Auburn. I was like, I was pissed off when Michael Dyer was ruled not down. I was like, this is, it killed me. So.
Good times.
All right. Well, that was a good show today.
Off the rails today.
That was a good show today. I did not expect to go an hour. Even more impressive that. The one daughter is still napping and the other one, she's cried a little bit, but she's held on. So day one of mom back to work and Mason on full-time work and dad duty. It's gone well so far. I need to get off this so I can do some more work before my window is gone. Children have wake windows. I got work windows. I'm in one right now. Got to capitalize on it. Thanks to Drew Galloway. I'm Mason Vo. Thanks for watching and listening to the KSO show. We got KSO Classic tomorrow. Daniel Thomas against UCLA in 2010. Drew hated the game, so that's your promo to watch tomorrow.
The second half was better.
All right, sure, whatever, hater.